This week on Barbell Shrug, we talk about why to compete and how to prepare for this year's CrossFit Open.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson and Christopher Moore. And of course, behind the camera is the magnificent CTP.
You going by Christopher now?
No.
does it make me sound smarter? Am I more
very distinguished?
Author.
Well, you're writing books now, so I have to, you know, it's more of a distinguished name.
I gotta work on my pretentiousness.
Yeah.
I gotta amp it
up.
Where
is your book?
Downstairs.
Oh, you should bring that so you can promote it. You should not bring it in the studio. All right, when we take a break, we'll come back up. We'll get a copy. We'll show it to the fans.
I will.
Yeah, good. Yeah. All right, so today we will be talking about the
after.
Open. Oh, wait. No, you know, we got to do the hook, then the promo.
We have an opening. They already saw the opening.
Oh.
Remember how this works? We only do it every week.
I'm so confused.
Is your beard on too tight today?
The beard is on way too tight.
Choking the breath.
Yeah, make sure you guys go over to barbellshrug.com. Sign up for the newsletter. If you do that, you will get the 8 snatch mistakes you might be making that could keep you from hitting big PRs.
Rich Froning with his abs there. You'd be so excited to lift.
Yeah, we get to hang out with Rich Froning and learn how to do snatches better.
No, Rich, not like that. Do it like this. You coached him up.
I was like, come on, Rich. Stop screwing this up.
Quit moving so bad, Rich. Come on.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about prepping for the Open, right? Or just competition in general, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so why are we talking about this, Doug?
Why are competitions important?
Doug was so adamant about bringing this topic up. I'm just kidding. No.
I think everyone should compete in the Open. There's no reason not to. It's the easiest competition to sign up for. It's in your gym. You don't have to travel. What's the $20? How much is it?
$20.
It's like $20.
And I know plenty of people are out there going, yeah, but $20. Dude. I have so many things. I got to go to that thing and that thing is due. I don't know if I really can spend $20 on this.
$20 is easily justified just in the fact that you can compare your results to like 100,000 other people.
The data.
That's cool
the
shit.
The leaderboard alone.
Yeah.
The coolest part of this whole event is it's a huge brand new kind of experiment with such a huge sample size where if you get involved, you'll be able to automatically get so much data to make yourself better. You don't get that from Power of the Meat or Way of the Meat. And by the way, for those meats you pay for one shitty meat that maybe you don't even compete against anybody at and doesn't really make you better, this is a fun thing to do. You might pay $100 to do that. How much is a good Way of the Meat? Power of the Meat's about $100 entry fee always.
It varies with Way of the Meat. It's 20 to 100. It
yeah.
kind of depends.
And you have a membership fee. You have membership dues that you probably have to pay to get in the thing and you got to travel. And this is a really awesome idea and concept I've never seen before in my
I've heard people complain career. About the $20 thing, like what are they doing with that money, they're just so greedy. I'm like,
it's $20. It's an event on a massive scale.
I bet that website costs like $100K to build and maintain. Like, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Have you ever built a website like that
and
before?
You gotta pay a guy to do that.
200,000 registrants.
You gotta pay the media team to keep track of all the results and post that every day and have the mechanism to filter the results and show you the data. For $20, it's laughably an important thing. Like, you must do this if you're interested at all in CrossFit. Do
anyone who complains about that, I can guarantee you spent $20.
If you complain about that, you also complain. You also
5K shitty T-shirt.
Yeah, and you complain about life's not fair and you can't do what you want to do and woe is me and my boss doesn't know shit. You're that kind of guy. You're a cunt. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
I know.
You
sorry.
Get something fun to do for 5 weeks in a row.
Like, 5 weeks in a row. That's
that
a
language
long time.
CTP's whistle. That language is harsh.
$20 for 5 weeks.
I revised that comment.
You have to bleep that out.
Yeah, bleep it.
You don't have to travel. You're going to do it in your home gym. Hell, you can do it in your garage and video it if you want.
Yeah.
Talk about low barrier to entry for sure.
I spent $100 on a grappling tournament. Got there. Had one match that was like 5 minutes long. Lost. Travel back home. It was like $100. $20 is well
terrible.
Worth it.
Terrible.
So just competing in general, like I say this all the time, like you should always balance learning, practicing, and doing. So learning, reading books, listening to podcasts, whatever, practicing, going and training and actually experiencing what it's like and trying to get results off of actual practice.
Man,
and
that's then, a good point, man.
And then signing up for a competition is the doing part. You have to do that to see if everything you've learned and everything you've practiced actually works.
You see,
if you
real.
Never test yourself,
yeah.
If you never test yourself, then you don't know if what you're doing is really really working as well as you think it's working. Yeah, you can hit a PR in the gym, and yeah, you obviously got stronger, but doing it in competition where you're being judged mm-hmm. and you're competing against other people is really the best way to like see if everything you've put your heart and soul into is actually coming
through. What's really different about that format is that usually if you're doing a competition, even CrossFit, you're at one place. And your results are all relative to whoever shows up to that event in that area, who's interested in that sport there. So if you do well or bad, it doesn't really mean anything. But if you're in an event with 300,000 people, mm-hmm. you know exactly with a large amount of confidence where you are. Yeah. There's no way.
Yeah, it's so powerful. A lot of people who are the best in their gym. And like, people, I'm the best. I'm the best. And then they go and they sign up and they're the 502nd best in their region.
Yeah. Or you have a really good Fran time because for whatever reason, you're kind of built to do those short workouts like Fran is, and you never do any of these other types of workouts. So you always do the workouts you're really good at, and you kind of avoid this other stuff that's in your shadow.
Boy,
and
howdy.
Signing up for a competition where you have no idea what's going to be thrown at you really is an easy way to expose your weaknesses. So if you want to be truly well-rounded, like CrossFit is supposed to be promoting, they're supposed to be super well-rounded athletes, you have to sign up for competition. That way, you get something thrown at you that you didn't expect, and then you can kind of rise to that new expectation and see, yeah. you know, just see what happens. If you don't ever do that, then you're going to have those weaknesses forever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people pick and choose workouts. They jump from, like, blog to blog, or they program for themselves. There's no and they congruity. Program the stuff they like, the stuff they're good at.
And there's no direction. There's no continuity yeah. between ideas. You're not linking things together. In a progressive way.
Yeah, I've been there myself, like programming for myself, and then you go to a competition and you get smashed and you're like, oh, I was not looking over there.
And I would say one more thing about this whole venue is that what's really cool, like most things in CrossFit, it's easy to talk shit about it up front, like fuck that sport. These guys are all just doing stupid shit. They're not periodizing. They're not getting strong. Meanwhile, that was true. Now it's not true. Now a guy runs a marathon and fucking clean and jerks almost 400 pounds. He's stronger than you. I don't give a shit. So you're wrong. But people talk shit about the format of this competition like crazy, did they not? Like, how are you going to have a video submission for a... People are going to say whatever they want. They can lie. They can cheat. They can steal. That hasn't happened. People have tried to cheat. You'll see one guy like crush a wad and be like number one in the world for a week. And then because it's a huge sample, and because you can't be cheating forever, and because you will get discovered, that gets washed out. I haven't seen any of that, really.
I do know one person, it was highly... It was one of those things where it was... I wouldn't say that she was cheating, but the reps were not...
You want to name names?
No, I'm not going to name names. people were pointing out that this score was just not humanly possible.
And what happened? They pointed it out.
And then she got banned from the whole year.
Yeah, you can't hide. It's really unfortunate
because I think she was a really good athlete, and someone made a mistake somewhere, but it didn't get by. So that was the important part.
It's where the open source format really works. You can't pull that off. You can't just tell people, oh, I snatched that. I'll tell them because you're going to have to back it up. And people know, like if you did better than Rich Froning in a wad, people are going to say, is that real?
Nick Ranker last year, I think it was he had done one of the wads. I think he was, I want to say it was the one with the muscle ups. And somebody saw the video and goes, oh, you know, two of those muscle ups, you didn't, you know, extend all the way at the top or something like that. And he goes, okay. So he went and shot another video, did it all over again. I think he may have even scored better. And Nick's a fantastic athlete.
Go,
and
he went to regionals. Now what?
So like people who maybe like shit talk it and they're like, oh, you know, you're not really finding the best athletes. Yeah, I mean, the cream is going to rise to the top and over a 5-week period.
It's actually, I know it seems so cutting edge and different. And there's a lot of change involved. It's so different than what people are used to. But think of the shenanigans that go on in any other kind of competition for powerlifting or weightlifting or maybe even sports. Like think of all the shit that people get away with, like bad lifts pass. Like that exists already. This is a very interesting step forward. This open source, huge group of people all participating in one thing. You're finding the actual best person. I love it.
Yeah, and the open is actually a really new idea. I mean, CrossFit is technically in its infancy as a sport and as a business and all that type of stuff. But the open itself we've done it for 3 years now, 11, 12, and 13. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, the first year, I think it was a little shaky. They had to ended up being 6 wads when it was supposed to be 5 because something, I can't remember off the top of my head, something got screwed up somewhere in the scoring or something
people
happened. The website. Oh, yeah, the website.
People are so quick to
the
criticize.
The website screwed up. Oh, yeah. And then they had to like, and so that was the first year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people were like, oh my God, I paid $20 for this.
See why it's bad? It's like people, like, right. Just because there's an initial hiccup doesn't mean it's a bad idea. Don't be so critical, people. Come
on. But it's been 3 years, so we have, you know, the first year, you didn't know what to expect. And then, like, every week you were going, oh, is it going to be another AMRAP? You know, it's like, oh, first week's an AMRAP. What will next week be?
Now Doug can tell you.
It's another AMRAP.
Well, anybody can tell you.
And what's the next week?
I feel like for our new people, we should explain that this is how you get to the games. Do we do that?
We're getting there. Shut up.
Most people probably already know that. But yeah, you do the Open, then if you qualify, you go to Regionals, and then eventually, if you're good enough, you go to the games. So that's why this is such a big deal.
Hopefully most people knew that, but there might be like 10 people out there. I got your back.
It's very right true. On. Some people might not know that.
So I nailed this, and then what happens? Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so like the first year, it was like, oh, they're going to do nothing but AMRAPs. Like, and that, and we're like, oh, it was a little disappointing because one of the things that CrossFitters love is variety. And when you get hit with like the same, what would that be called? Time domain.
I don't know.
It's not so mixed modal domain.
Let's not get too far into those weeds.
Same style of workout.
Yeah, but we now know it's probably due to scoring. I'm 99% sure that it's easier to score AMRAPs than it is to mix it up from wad to wad. So we've got 3 years knowing that we're doing AMRAPs, and we know what Doug, you ran the numbers. What are we dealing with? What type of time domains are we dealing with?
Doug put on glasses with a little tape on them. He got out a calculator. He sat down with all the coffee, and he ran the fucking numbers.
Doug's middle name is actually
serious scientific research.
Crunching shit.
Spreadsheet over here.
Right. So yeah, nothing complicated about this, but yeah, over the last 3 years, they've all been AMRAPs. That's historical data. It doesn't really mean that all the open wads in the future are going to be AMRAPs. They could be whatever the hell CrossFit wants them to be. So, but we do know that historically is what has happened. And I think the range has been between 5 and 20 minutes. They usually average around 10 or 11 minutes long. So, you know, prepping for the open, you know, you got to think about doing workouts that are right around that time domain. You don't need to do a whole lot of really long wads. Doing some shorter wads is probably a good thing. You know, people that compete in the mile and 2 mile, they run lots of 400 meter sprints, 200 meter sprints, 800 meter sprints. So you can work on that pace. But knowing that you're right around that 10 minute AMRAP is something really good to know going into one of these type of competitions.
Yeah, if you look at athletes that are doing like the really, really long stuff to prep for the CrossFit season, a lot of times they're people who are looking towards regionals or the games, and so their training, overall training volume and the volume of individual workouts are going to be a lot higher. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as Doug was saying, it's not you're training for a 10-minute workout or an event, so you know, doing hour and a half long runs and stuff like that may not be the most appropriate things for your training.
Yeah, or even running at all as something that you're practicing for the open isn't maybe the best use of your time. There's never been any running in any of the open workouts. I mean, if you're trying to design a workout that hundreds of thousands of people can do all throughout the world, and they're doing video submissions and they're being judged by people that aren't really experienced in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. Being able to accurately measure a distance, you know, for a guy that's in Washington State and a guy that's in Kenya and a guy that's in China, and then have that distance be the exact same.
Uphill, downhill, sea level, weather is fucking impossible.
Yeah, I mean,
unfortunately, sea level.
What? Well, if I live in fucking, you know, in Tibet and you live in Florida and we're running, it's not fair, is it? I'm CrossFitting in Tibet in my monk outfit.
That would be any not exercise. Fair. That's why I was like, what?
That's why I never CrossFit in Tibet.
It's easier. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, though, like if you can do like fucking 5 deadlifts, it's just a different thing. It's not as great.
When are CrossFitters going to start, you know, living at altitude? That's what I want to know. I mean, some already are, but does that give them an edge? I don't know.
I worked out in the altitude that one time, remember? That was pretty sweet.
Colorado?
Walked into a Walmart and I thought the lights were turning on.
Oh, yeah. You were, you had like a psychedelic trip from exercise.
Yep. Yeah. That's altitude. Oh,
where was this?
I don't know the hell you guys are talking about, but.
Was that in Colorado?
Oh, yeah. He was in Colorado and he went and did a wad.
Why?
And then he came back and he was like completely out of breath and exhausted. And then we were at Walmart doing some grocery shopping. He was like, I feel really funny. And all of a sudden, like, the lights flickered in the building. He's like, was that me or did that really happen?
Oh, wow.
The timing was impeccable.
Right.
Luckily, altitude sickness strikes a little higher elevation than the Walmart in Denver. Probably at 10 times that height.
So we know the workouts are 10, 11 minutes long on average. What are the big movements that we have to look out for, Doug? Since you ran all the data.
I don't have that list in front of me, but it's all the basics. It's thrusters and cleans or clean and jerk, snatches, as far as the barbell movements go. What were the other few barbell movements?
Other barbell movements?
Push presses was one of them. There were seven or eight barbell movements and seven or eight regular movements.
Yeah, a lot of times we'll just list it as shoulder overhead so you can jerk it if you want or just press
it. Core fundamental shit.
Yeah. Yeah, the core barbell movements. And then they also have burpees, muscle ups, double unders, wall ball shots,
pull ups,
chest to bar pull ups specifically. They've ever programmed anything other than chest to bar pull ups. So for me personally, I program pull ups occasionally, but we work a lot on chest bar pull ups.
Yeah. So they're drilling the fundamentals of movement and CrossFit staples as deeply as possible. Like, let's find out who this is fundamentally as sound as can be. Then go up in difficulty from there.
I think they do the chest to bar pull-ups just because it's easy to judge.
Yeah, you got there.
But when you get to regionals, they'll have like workouts with just pull-ups. So I don't know.
Yeah, but they do all the basics. There's never been any kettlebell movements, likely because there's, you know, of the hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, maybe they don't have access to RX kettlebells in most cases. And I would imagine CrossFit wants the most amount of people possibly to be involved in the open. The more people, the better for the most part. It helps grow the sport and helps grow awareness about the sport. So there's never been any kettlebell movements. There's never been any like heavy yoke walks or prowler pushes.
Odd lifts and stuff.
Yeah, no odd lifts, no learning, nothing novel, nothing new. They save all that stuff for regionals and especially the games. There's a lot of novel stuff in the games.
If you learn it at a level one seminar, that's probably the stuff you've got to know.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, and again, no running, just because it's so hard to confirm that everyone is doing the exact same distance. No rowing, because again, a lot of people probably don't have access to $700-$800 piece of equipment like a rower. So it's basically just like all the core fundamental barbell movements and body weight ish movements. I'd say double unders, you need a jump rope. Obviously, wall balls, you need a wall ball, and box jumps, you need a box to jump onto. But for the most part, it's like bare minimum as far as equipment.
Yeah, there's no one rep maxes. Like, there's never been programmed like find your one rep max snatch or clean and jerk or anything like that. So working on that one rep max strength, preparing for that for the open is probably not a great idea. It's good to find improve your one rep max strength over, you know, I think that's really important during the off season. But as you get closer, what you can do with a pretty heavy weight for multiple reps is probably a little more along the lines you need to be going.
Yeah, you're not going to be tested on that specifically in the open. So if you're working on your conditioning, your muscular endurance, and kind of your anaerobic endurance, your short interval type endurance, speed endurance, then you don't need to worry if your max drops 10, 15 pounds. As long as your strength goes down maybe just a tiny bit at most, maybe you just maintain, but your fitness goes way high prior to the open. That's really what you want to focus on.
Not
peaking
strength
your strength right before the open is not a necessity.
Not strength for strength's sake. Strength for building efficiency and quality of motion.
Yeah, like I've actually made that mistake in the past. You know, the weightlifting mentality is like, oh, we got to have like peak, you know, speed, power, and force output right beforehand. It's like, well, that is not a piece of the pie in the open.
You got to get the base of your pyramid aligned with the height of your...
Thank you. Thank you, wise one.
That's right. Here, I pulled up the eight
How tall is a pyramid, Mike?
How tall is a pyramid?
It's as wide as its base.
As wide as its base, of course,
God,
Chris.
God, how did you never know asshole that? Knows yeah. this.
I was so confused.
The quiz right, master.
So here, the eight non-barbell movements were double unders, push-ups, box jumps, burpees, toes to bar, pull-ups, muscle-ups, and wall balls. And then, as Mike said, that was chest to bar pull-ups. The seven barbell movements were snatches, cleans, jerks, push presses, overhead squats, thrusters, and deadlifts. So bare bones basics as far as CrossFit's concerned.
Yeah, the other thing I find interesting is the chest to bar pull-ups. I find that as people spend year-round doing pull-ups, and they'll throw in chest to bar pull-ups sometimes. It should probably be the other way around. And a lot of times, the ability to string, if you can't string together like five chest bar pull-ups, it's probably more of like an absolute strength issue than it is like your ability just just doing more pull-ups probably isn't going to be beneficial. You probably need to fill a deficiency
It's
somewhere.
Like if you do like a bunch of bodyweight squats like for hundreds of reps, but yet you don't squat your bodyweight. It's like, well, you should probably just get stronger, then work some more reps.
Exactly. It's interesting that chest to bar pull-ups aren't the standard. Usually the full range of motion thing, like the longest range of motion possible, especially in CrossFit, tends to be the standard. You go ass to ankles on squats, assuming you have good technique. You don't just sit parallel or do quarter squats as the standard. Parallel isn't the standard, and then you get to a competition and they're like, oh, nope, all the way down in this competition. Ass to grass is always the standard, and then in CrossFit they never do just parallel as a standard. But for pull-ups, chest to bar should be the standard, and then if you get to a competition and it's just a regular pull-up, you should be like, fuck bonus. Yeah, this is awesome.
We rattle out a bunch of these. Easy. Yeah.
Bonus, so
it's interesting that it's switched for pull-ups for some reason.
Yeah, probably just because a lot of people can't do them.
Yeah.
But then that's their problem.
And they throw them at the end they open. So what you'll find is at the beginning of the open, the movements are more simple. And then as it goes on, that's where you're going to find the muscle-ups, chest to bar pull-ups.
So it seems like one of the keys to your success in this competition. I'll maybe I'm just a fat pal that doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, but let me air this idea out, would you? It seems like it's a time for honesty and humility and reality checking. Like, look, if I'm going to do well, I may be good at lots of things, but I got to go back and make sure that I carefully look at things that I may not think are so... Like, maybe you think it's a little bit beneath you to go back and drill your just basic pull-up technique or really analyze your muscle-ups if you think you're good at them, to really step back and go, are my fundamentals as sound as they could be? Because they're going to drill this shit. Like, they're going to really test you. If you're scared of facing your goat, if you know that that part of that thing is not what you want to do and you're going to try to make a run at this, you really have to gut check and say, look, I need to really... scrape into these things I know I'm not that good at, or I think I need data to tell me if I'm just making a big assumption that my chest to bar pull up is just fine, or I can do 5 muscle ups, not a problem. Maybe it's a huge fucking problem. Maybe you just don't want to face it.
At one time I thought 7 unbroken muscle ups was good.
Yeah.
And now, like, you know, I think you need to be doing at least 15 if you're going to score decent.
Probably
going to
be a lot of people every year who go, you know what, I think I'm really ready. And because they aren't really looking for the data, they just don't know how far off they are.
They know
and how they get they, really, and they get really disappointed and beat themselves up for not being good enough when they finish like 1,000th out of 1,001. They go, fuck, I guess I'm terrible. Well, no, I mean, you have a really shitty attitude.
Yeah, it depends on your goal, I guess. You know, feeling like you're in the best shape of your life, I find that to be very important for me now.
Well, I feel great now. Right now?
So, I mean, you talk about this in your book, you know, being happy with the progress you're making and not getting wrapped up in what other people are accomplishing. And so I think the Open's a good opportunity to kind of see where you really are and what's really possible, maybe raising your standards. But I also wouldn't get too wrapped up in, I didn't qualify for regionals. You know, I think...
Yeah, that's the outcome.
I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, if you don't qualify for regionals, you know, but you're in the best shape of your life, there's no reason to get down on yourself because you can't control what's happening elsewhere. But the standard's now been raised for you, your expectations, and now that's somewhere you can go in the future.
And I guess you use the urgency and the lure and the drive of the goal, because that's what we want to compete. We want to try our best to get there. It's just that you don't beat yourself up if you don't get there, and use that impetus, that drive to make you take the close look at everything you're ignoring, all the things that are below your radar now that you really need to scratch into. Like, yeah, I haven't really taken the time to consider whether this fundamental thing is on point. Now I should. Yeah. That's a great reason to compete right there, because you dig up all these little skeletons you're hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the Open for beginners because it's a competition that you don't have to go into it after doing a super high volume of training leading up to it. I mean, if you want to go to regionals and games, you definitely need to be prepared for that, but that's after the Open. For a beginner, you go to a competition, most regular competitions even are 2 or 3 wads in one day. Like, if you have been doing higher volume training, you'll be able to handle 2 or 3 or more wads in one day, especially 2 or 3 wads in a day and then 2 or 3 wads the next day. But the Open isn't like that at all. It's one single wad, and then you have a whole week to recover, and then another single wad. So if you haven't been doing super high volume training, you can still tolerate the volume of the Open just fine.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's take a break real quick, and then we're going to talk about how you should... things you should think about and how you might want to approach the Open when it comes up this year.
And what sort of steroids you should be using to crush the Open.
We'll put out a list.
That'd be the technique quad.
Asterisk there.
How to inject steroids in the technique quad.
In your face.
Shenqueer.
And we're back. Barbell Shrugged is here.
Oh, it's so good to be here and be alive.
Drastic change in tone.
Chris Moore and Doug Larson. CTP behind the camera.
Brothers. Hanging we're out, looking, talking strength and fitness. And strength.
We're looking at Chris Moore's new book.
This is the cover's
Way
not
past
final.
Strong.
The cover's not final. They fucked up the print job, but the content is really delicious. Really.
Yeah.
Tell your story again.
Yeah, tell your story.
Okay.
Yeah, so you... Chris has been through quite the ordeal in the last week regarding his book.
My life's not fair for an author. It's fucking stupid to write books, but here's what happened. So this is the first. I ordered 20 of these just to give it a test, hand out to people, get some feedback, because it's going to launch in about a month. I went ahead and ordered a big batch to follow up so I can have it in process, but I didn't click. To make a proper book on this website, you got to click certain things, and old Chris didn't click certain things because Chris assumed wrongly that they would just sort of just fix it. Because my wife put in the orders before and they just kind of fixed it. And I didn't realize that they fix it, then you buy. You don't buy it, then they fix it. So I put in my order for 150 books. And it turns out that really all I selected was just ream after ream after ream of printed off paper. One side, black and white fucking copy paper. I've got, coming to me, 15 boxes.
15 boxes?
15 boxes of paper.
They haven't arrived.
150 copies of this book. This book is 270 pages. So it's really good stuff. I'll tell you about it in a minute. But so if you take this book and don't print it right, what you get is 8x11 sheets of copy paper, 300 pages thick, times
loose paper.
150. Loose, no unbound paper I can't way. Do anything with.
Okay, I knew that that happened, but as you're describing it, I'm realizing like how much paper is being delivered to you.
So
how much did you spend? Tell them how much you spent.
Go to your fucking, go to Office Max and be like, how much paper I could get for $2,300 fucking dollars right now? It'd be a lot of paper. So I don't know where I'm, so what we're going to do is, CTP and I have really the only idea that's serviceable in this situation. We're just going to go out in the field. We'll bring you guys along. Bring every gun and ammunition item you have. And we're just going to fucking blow it all up, I think. And make a music video for Barbell Shrugged, I guess. And
I think we should use nothing but assault rifles.
I want to light shit on fire.
I'm going to light cigars with them. We'll blow it up. We'll assault rifle the boxes. We'll just light them on fire.
There's nothing more manly looking. If we get Instagrams of us with guns and cigars in our mouths.
Shooting.
Nothing
Speaking
more
of guns,
manly than
can
that.
Can you grow some guns if you're training for the open?
So let me wrap up this thing real quick. So what this book is coming, regardless of my fuck up, the book is coming December 15th or so. I'm not going to commit to anything right now. I got to make sure this second batch of orders comes out the right way. But it's four sections. Section one on establishing a personal philosophy for training in life. Section two is on vice. Incorporating excess in your life in a wise way to keep better balance and to get more productivity out of your life, actually. There's a section that's just some cool pictures. The third proper section on set and setting, because as we all know, what you do is not nearly as important as who you do it with and where you are when you fucking do it. That's important consideration, especially for training. And section four is on mindfulness. So how do you practically apply ideas of meditation and peace of mind to get more out of your training and more out of your life? So it's a mix of philosophy and like me going into the weeds and getting all artsy-fartsy in the writing about it. And then there's applied bits that tell you exactly what to do to take that and then use it.
Right on, man.
And it'll come with a strength seminar video. I did a two-hour video that kind of brings 10 of these ideas out and fleshes them out in a seminar talk. So it's going to come bundled with it if you get it from my website. So it's going to be pretty cool.
Audiobook for this one too?
Fuck no.
No?
I might do it next year, but dude, here's the thing about audiobook. It takes a long time. To sit down by yourself and act out everything you wrote and get it recorded and packed. It's a whole other project. It takes a long time. I did that for progress. I might do it again for this, but that's not going to happen
after,
right now.
After that passionate no you just gave me, you just said, oh, yeah, I might do it for this.
I end up always trying to do everything. Fuck it. But
Chris always is like, oh, I'm going to take a break. And then next thing I know, he's slaving away at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I've got 7,000 more words for the next book, so I don't know why I'm doing this.
He's going to be competing in the open. He won't have any time.
Chris is doing a good job getting us back on track over there.
Oh, right.
Great job, CTP.
He's at least, I don't know if he's doing a good job, but he's definitely trying.
He's hinting at it. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Knock, knock.
All right. Who's there?
The open.
It's the open.
By the way, you asked me about the book.
I know.
It's a true story.
All back right. on track.
All right, so we're going to go through a variety of questions about the open and just competing in general.
But you do the open.
You look so confused.
I can't remember where we left off before the break.
Okay. All right, I'm taking over now.
That's my problem.
Start with the open, maybe.
All right, the open's a great competition to do as your very first competition, but if you have time before the open, should you do a competition before the open just as practice, or how often should you compete throughout the year?
That is a good question.
I know. That's why we wrote it down on the notes.
Very practical.
I have no idea.
We'll research that. Come back to you, audience.
I kind of like the idea of doing a competition once a quarter. So once every 3 or 4 months, doing something that allows you to fully prep for something and also fully recover and get ready for the next thing. I think if you're doing a competition and you're going real hard in the paint for that particular competition, doing it more frequently than that can lead to burnout. Mm-hmm. And I think that 3 or 4 times a year is pretty much the ideal amount of practice.
I think that allows people to build the skill of competing, because the part of the thing you got to get over is just showing up to a competition taking it way too seriously. Like, my life's going to end if I don't do well at this CrossFit meet. No, it won't. Nobody actually cares.
Yeah.
Get used to it, have fun, and then after you do it, like these times, like just not only what the minimal time for you will be, but 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, and you're going to go into the proper ones where you actually got to perform focused and not worked up about it.
Yeah, if you don't compete semi-frequently, it's hard to relax in competition, which is especially important in CrossFit because you'll gas early.
Can't freak
out,
man.
If you can't just go at a fast but steady, relaxed pace, especially for the longer metcons.
Do you think it's like jiu-jitsu where, like, you know,
yeah,
beginners in jiu-jitsu freak out and exhaust themselves rolling, and the master is so relaxed, like, just chill.
Yeah,
it's hard to do that when you're, if you're doing fucking thrusters and you're uptight and stressed out, you're going to get really tired really quick.
Yeah, if you saw one of the open launch videos or the Road to Regionals launch videos, I talked about the 80-80 rule. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of modified that from something I heard BJ Penn say a while back, was he fights at 80%, not at 100%. He fights at 80% where he's fast and explosive but relaxed so he doesn't gas too quickly, which BJ Penn back in the day he was so talented, but he wasn't always in really, really good shape. Mm-hmm. As he got later in his career, he got in better shape. But so that was the thing for him. He didn't want to gas if he couldn't knock the guy out or choke him out like early in the fight. So he always fought at 80%. So I think that's a good advice for CrossFitters as well. 80% basically means you're going as fast as possible, but you're doing it in a relaxed, not overstimulated state.
You got to sustain this.
Yeah. And then I think you went into, and then after 80% of the WOD, maybe you spend the last 20% going balls deep.
Probably why.
Yeah, that was the 80-80 rule. 80% effort for the first 80% of the workout. So if you're doing a 20-minute AMRAP, you go 80% full speed for the first 16 minutes, and then the last 4 minutes, then you can really like put it on. You shouldn't redline and dig deep and go hard into the paint, as you just said, until the last couple minutes of the workout. That way, right as the buzzer hits, you're totally spent.
Right.
Yeah, that's right there why a typical weightlifter powerlifter doesn't do good at CrossFit type movements with barbells, right? Because they're used to full go one rep, boom.
Yeah.
Which you got to train that way, but you got to feel what it's like to take that strength you develop by being explosive and backing it down and sustaining it and being smooth with it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
a skill that's wholly like utilizing that strength in a controlled way and not getting so stimulated.
One way to develop that skill, and we were kind of talking about, kind of alluding to it already, which was practicing to compete. I think one way to kind of practice that during a competition is to not take the competition that seriously. So I find that people may choose 3 or 4 competitions a year. It might be a 2-day meet or something like that. And then, but they taper for it. You know, they want to take it seriously. They want to go through, they want to treat it like it was the CrossFit Games or something.
No, you just fucking do it.
And what it is they have this big taper and then they have this big recovery afterwards. And what they should probably do is just, you know, maybe take a day or two off beforehand, treat it like training. Mm-hmm. Treat it like it's a practice. Yeah, the next week you're going to have to lower your training volume and stuff to recover from it, because the volume of that weekend is probably higher than what you train at on a daily basis.
Those are simple, intuitive adjustments, though. It's you're not drilling down into science or some sort of convoluted idea to prepare yourself for something that you don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, so I say pick one competition a year, and for a lot of people it's going to be the Open. And really, that's the competition where 2 months out you start making changes to your training to make it more like that, and you're really prepping for that specific competition. But the rest of the year when you compete, just have low expectations of yourself, really. Don't worry about getting on a podium, and relax and have a good time. And this is a good time to practice how you fuel and all that kind of stuff, how you eat, how you rest the night before, things like that. And if you go in with low expectations, I think that you'll be more relaxed during the practice competitions. So in the end, you'll be more relaxed every time you compete.
So you're saying not to change your training program leading up to these not so important competitions. So if the Open is 7 months away and strength specifically is your goat in the off season, months and months and months away, you should be working on strength. And then if you sign for a competition and that competition's coming up in 4 to 6 weeks, you shouldn't derail all your strength training and be like, man, I really need to like improve my Metcon fitness for this competition and totally derail your long-term goals for this short-term competition.
Yeah, actually,
just keep doing what you're doing and go compete just wherever you happen to be.
That's actually one of the toughest things I have as a coach is having that conversation with the athletes. You know, they want I encourage them to do competitions, and when they do, they're like, okay, it's a month out. What do I need to do to prep? I'm like, nothing. We're gonna keep the progression moving to get you better by the Open. We're not worried about this thing in October. Mm-hmm. You're going to go compete, treat it like practice, and you're not going to be at your best. Accept that you're not going to be at your best and treat it like practice. And that's so hard because people have egos.
This whole idea is like really where all your best performance comes from, is these little pockets of wisdom and practical intuitive things that you just struggle with. Like I myself, when it came to strength, the best thing I ever learned was that when I started lifting heavy basically all the time, like every time I touch a barbell, I lift it as much as I can lift. It's nothing special about that. What it did for me was teach me how to not take each lifting session so seriously. So instead of like when I was a powerlifter, I'd run around snorting ammonia, thinking about death metal all day, getting really amped up, yelling and screaming and lifting a max weight. It's totally unnecessary. It breeds in you this uptightness. You take it too seriously. It adds to the fatigue and stress. If you de-emphasize it, then you can really cultivate the skill. So after a while, it becomes like, oh yeah, I compete. Or I lift a heavy weight. I just do it. And it takes nothing out of you to do it. Then when it is time to turn it on and be focused, then you really have this reserve. You're recovered, you're wise, you're not getting too uptight, you're putting your focus and your arousal right where it needs to be. That's where it starts coming together in my view. That's where the wisdom is.
And regarding the tapering, we're kind of saying don't do a big taper. You know, you might want to spend like a week lowering the volume the week after, keeping the volume low after one of these weekend competitions. But for something like the Open, you know, I don't know if I would call it a taper, but there's a phase of training that happens like 2 months before that, where the movements start looking a lot like what, you know, we know the movements look like historically. And we really start training the time that we know that, you know, we may have a higher volume training, and our training volume time might be really high this time of year. But come January, it's going to start shrinking. The volume's going to get lower and the intensity is going to go up.
This time of year is November, if you're watching this in the future.
Thank you, Doug.
You just ruined the evergreenness.
You fucking ass.
The Open is the Open's in March. Normally, they can move it whenever they want, and it's all up to Dave Castro. Is what I hear, and it is November now, so we're like 5 months out right now.
It's time to start getting to work, I think.
I think a lot of people don't talk about the coffee taper, though. Like you want to taper your coffee intake.
You shouldn't taper your coffee.
You don't want to shit your pants. What kind of madness? Your first competition.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Don't.
You sound really passionate about
don't shit
this.
Your pants. Yeah, but that's another thing. Like if you decide I never take anything. Maybe before my first workout, I should take a bunch of stimulants. Drink 5 cups of coffee, a Venti, whatever that Venti shit is you
I've
drink
seen
every
this mistake
morning.
So many times.
And you start going, ha, ha, and you freak out. You're tweaking out before you're supposed to compete.
Yeah, it's one of those, do not change things on game day.
No.
I've seen
what,
that.
What will this pill do for me today?
A dozen times.
Yeah.
I've seen this happen, I don't know how many times. Like, oh my God, I've been prepping for this. I've been doing everything right. I got to be really good.
My glute then, feels sore. I might want a foam roll for an hour before I lift.
And then their friend's like, all right, what I like is NO Explode. And their other friend likes Jack 3D. And their
Rock
other friend likes
face.
This. And he's like, I'll just do all of them. I want to do the best.
It happens all the time. We saw a guy almost fucking die like 30, in Columbus, Ohio from doing that whale with
him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's like 30 seconds into the wad and they're like, and they're freaking out. And none of those stimulants help at all.
The guy thought, oh, I'm lifting today. Might as well take this red line. The guy fucking had a heart attack.
He had a couple of them.
He had like three.
We saw the guy just collapse after he lifted. Like, this guy's going to fucking die.
Collapse and go into seizure.
Yeah.
So don't change things on game day.
That's not us calling out red line. That was the doctors that came backstage. Right.
Don't sue us.
They were telling us that this whole
That's what happened. We can go get the evidence of this.
That's not our words.
No.
That's the medical,
sounds
that's the
like our
doctors.
Words.
I will say this. There is a dosage on the can, And this guy took more than the
three
prescribed,
times that.
Yeah, the prescribed dose.
Why his would mistake. Anyone ever do that?
Not Redline's fault. His mistake.
And that guy was like 55 or 60 years old.
Yeah. Again,
he wasn't like a 20-year-old dude.
Not just what you take.
Trying not to get sued.
It's not just what you take. It's don't warm up differently. Don't freak out and think you're tight and start foam rolling obsessively the night before. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. One thing Louis always said that's right is that before a meet, the hay is in the barn. You don't get stronger this last week, but you can get weaker by doing silly shit. Don't get weaker. Don't get worse right before the show. Just hold your ground. Everything's going to be fine. Don't freak out.
So what should your taper look like for the important competitions like the Open? 2-3 weeks out. How are you ratcheting down your volume that way when the Open comes around, you're at your best and you're not getting weaker the week before, like Chris was saying, by overdoing it?
Yeah, it depends. You know, anytime we talk about anything, it's, you know, the caveat is...
No, I want a definitive answer. I came to you as a content expert. Tell me what to do.
That's right. That doesn't get mentioned enough. The answer is always it depends.
It depends.
Yeah, it's hard, man.
What I like to do is the volume is going to be higher 3 weeks out. That's probably like 2 to 3 weeks out. That's when things are going to be probably the most painful. That's when the intensity is going to be high. That's when the volume is going to be crossing over with some intensity, and you're going to hit some moments where the Chris, you are messing up the microphones.
That wasn't me.
It was you.
I'm going to get my hands off everything. I'm
the intensity and the volume kind of cross over around 2 to 3 weeks out. And so you're going to have a week or two where the volume and intensity are kind of relatively high and kind of high for both of them to exist at the same time. That doesn't happen very often, but near competition it does. That's when you need to take recovery most seriously, because that's when people tend to get injured. You know, they're prepping for it and they want to do really good, so they're doing everything 110% instead of 95% or whatever. And that's kind of, I know this from personal experience, like, you know, timing that intensity and volume crossover, you know, poorly, or hitting it too hard, or trying to do extra work during that time, not a good idea. Do what your coach says. And what's going to happen is the intensity is getting high. What that means is your workouts are going to get shorter, which means that you can push harder. And so a lot of times what I do is maybe this time a year or further. Sorry, I'll try to stop saying this time of year.
Jerk.
If
it happens to be November. Yeah, this time of the year, if you're months out from the competition, you'll be doing things that a lot of your conditioning will be at 85 to 90% effort. And then as you get closer to the Open, that's when you're starting to go more all out. 2 weeks out, you should be really crushing it. And then the week leading up to a competition, that's actually you kind of pull everything back. You pull the volume and intensity back, let your body adapt, let your hormones all kind of come back to
pay back your debt,
higher levels, and then you can come in and kill it. For the Open specifically, it being 5 weeks long, it's more like a season than it is a single competition. So the taper for the Open is actually a little more conservative. And from week to week, you've got to like take into consideration what the Open was. You got to look at the athletes. You know, one of the questions we had written down that people might have is like, you know, how should I train in between Open wads? And that's going to depend on the athlete, because when the athletes start doing the Open wads, if you get completely, if you're not used to the volume or a specific movement, you're not used to the volume for that specific movement, and you get totally destroyed, you might need to do some other things. You might need to lower the volume a little extra than the average person. Or maybe the volume of the workout was just cake, maybe kind of sore. And you can actually ramp up the volume pretty high again on Monday if you're going to compete on Saturday.
You got to be careful with that, though, because maybe how you feel is not the greatest indicator.
Right.
have a buddy help you measure some things to be sure that you're not that beat.
Yeah, you can look. Well, that's why you have a coach.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the historical data. This is what I'm used to. This is the type of volume I do well with. And then, you know, but if someone's really low volume training and then going how you feel may not be so good, like you're saying, and then you start throwing volume at them again, it could just totally send them into
the simplest thing. I always think about is like, I just think every acute event is standalone and must be accounted for. I think of it like credit card charges. If I make a small charges, I pay it off. Small charge, pay it off like my normal training. I know I'm doing fine. I'll recover in time for the next thing. But a huge event where I got together with my buddies and crushed it, and we really hit way harder than normal. I went X% above the normal. normal demand, I go, I got to pay this back before I do it again.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking in terms of that. It's always helped me just in my own mind. Like, I know that it may not be a perfect calculation of how much I scale down or up, but I know I've got to do something above and beyond to recover from that special event. Yeah. That means the recovery is a little extra. The eating is a little more focused on that for a few days after. And
right.
It buffers you back and gets you back to
that is definitely baseline. The time. That is definitely the time to get hypercaloric. Eat more than you think you need.
And it helps you also, like when you go, look, my training sucks. Like, I didn't do good on this week's open. What was wrong with my training? What else happened? Like, oh, well, my dog died or my girlfriend told me to fuck off. Other stresses that contribute to that debt. You got to keep those main things in mind and how things are jumping on top of you. And if it hits at the same time that big workout did, then even more work on the recovery. Just keep those common sense ideas in mind. It helps
a
lot.
Or I ordered $2,300 worth of
fuck.
Paper.
Dude, I was... Thursday, I could have jumped off my roof. I was like, fuck! That was really bad, but I'm so smiling about it now.
Doing the open on that day would have been a poor choice.
Well, I'm never going to do the open because I'm fat. So yeah. Let's get that out of the way first. But I can do handstands.
So it may have sounded like I danced around the issue a little bit. You know, how do you prep? Because I didn't give anything very, very concrete. But it depends on the training history of the individual. But yep. The average person should probably do movements that were not in the open. Do movements that week that you can anticipate might show up. You go, oh, we already did power cleans and pull ups. Maybe I should be ready for wall balls and thrusters and muscle ups this week. So mm-hmm. You can kind of try to game it a little bit on the movement side of things.
Just to add some numbers to that abstraction. If you're an expert, abstraction works great. If you're a total beginner, then abstraction is just confusing. So as an oversimplification, say 3 weeks out, you normally do 5x5 back squats on Mondays, and then you do 3x5 back squats the next week, and then you just do 1x5 back squats the last week, and then you compete on Saturday. So just ratcheting it down for the 3 weeks out. That's oversimplified in a million different ways, but you can see how going from 5x5 to 3x5 to 1x5 and then competing on that Saturday, you won't be as beat up on that Saturday as you would have on any other normal week.
And it's enough work to keep you as strong as you were when you did the 5x5.
Yeah, and you certainly won't get weaker in that situation.
So don't freak out. Don't go like, I'm doing less, I'm going to show up, I'm gonna shit my pants, embarrass myself in front of everybody and God and everybody else. No, that won't happen.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks leading up to a big competition, really your only goal is to not feel like shit, not be too beat up, and not get injured.
Stay loose, right? Stay happy.
So actually, especially in my situation, like prepping for an MMA fight, 2 weeks off an MMA fight, you feel like shit. You get your ass kicked, you got a black eye, all your joints hurt. Like
you're beef jerky.
You've been getting your ass kicked. And so leading up to competition, you just want to not hurt going into a competition. You want your nose to not feel broken, so the first time you get punched, you don't feel like you broke your nose again.
So my nose.
Yeah, you just want to stay healed up. You want that broken nose feeling to only show up like in the last round, not the very first punch, right? So same thing in CrossFit. You don't want to be all beat up all the time.
No.
So the last couple of weeks, it's okay if you have access to things like prowlers, and most people have access to a rower, things that aren't going to Airdyne, things that aren't going to beat up your joints. You can get a awesome metabolic effect without beating up your joints, without getting overly sore, and those things. The things that you normally use for active recovery, like rowing and Airdynes, you can do a lot of that leading up to competition without really beating yourself up too much.
Yeah, again, don't do anything new then. Don't let go, you know, I'll try this Swedish contrast ice bath therapy a week before. No, don't fucking try that after, man. Just ease into that stuff. Just do what you normally do.
Yeah. I like the idea of using Airdyne and row, things that aren't going to tear your muscles up, prowler sprints, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, practice the movements you can anticipate. And then you kind of get the metabolic demand through things like that because, you know, during a competition season is going to be the time you probably get hurt because that's just when you're pushing it the hardest. That's when the intensity is the highest. And, you know.
You get breakdowns in form when you're really, really pushing hard.
Yeah. So when the open starts, again, it's one workout every week for 5 weeks. How do you manage the training time in between each open WOD? So between you do the first WOD on Saturday and next Saturday you got WOD 2, what do you do that week? How do you manage training hard enough to stay in as good a shape as possible, maybe even get in a tiny bit little better shape, but not, again, overdoing it where when you show up for WOD number 2, you're beat up and you're tired and you're not as ready as you could be.
Actually, one thing I like to do is...
Chicken sacrifice to Jobu, then what?
After the chicken sacrifice.
Jobu bless bats, then I train.
Actually, like right after, especially if you're only doing one workout in a day, like the open, what I like to do is do like maybe a 10-minute AMRAP of some like recovery movements. Do some things, just get blood flowing again. You don't want to end on. I don't like ending on a high lactic threshold type workout. Mm-hmm. So when you finish and you're like on the ground and rolling around and everything hurts and everything burns,
flopping like a salmon.
Wait 10, 20 minutes and then go do a 10-minute AMRAP of like kettlebell swings, like mm-hmm. movements that aren't going to tear you up. Kind of do get on the Airdyne, you know, work on some double unders. Mm-hmm. That's probably a good time to work on some movements that you might not be good at, that you might anticipate the next week. You know, you're fatigued and now you're practicing double unders. You suck at double unders. Maybe it's time to practice that. And so I kind of like practicing the skills you might suck at that you can anticipate a week from now while you're like completely destroyed.
I had a conversation years ago with a guy. You reminded me of it. We were talking about what you finish with the workout. We were grad students at the time who took things a little too seriously. So we're getting into like genetics research and thinking about this. But we talked about research. I'll zoom up to a practical level for this. But I think you would want to end the workout and with the kind of adaptation or the kind of feeling you want to be left with. Like, you don't want to get off the floor and mosey out of the gym like you feel like shit, because everything right. else the rest of that day is kind of like that. And the adaptation that you're kind of left with is a sticky one where you got to do a lot of recovery to get good again. But if you leave the gym getting over it and feeling good and bouncy again, that's a much better way to end any training session.
Psychologically, I think.
Psychologically, they look at molecularly, everything.
It's like if you watch a comedian and if at the very end of the show it's like not that exciting.
Or you end with a
which
flop.
We experienced last week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
It's like, yeah, we went and saw a comedian. And, you know, like the high point was in the middle, and then it just kind of went down from there. And then at the end, we were like,
And it doesn't matter how funny he was. Yeah, it doesn't matter how funny.
Like, that show sucked because it didn't end on a high note. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, you know, not only practicing your guts, but it's probably a great time to do some things you're really good at also. So you can end on a high note from a psychological perspective. You can... you know, flush out everything.
It's really meaningful too.
If you want to learn more about that, you can watch Daniel Kahneman's TED Talk. He talks a lot about finishing on a high note and people's memory of something, especially like something really painful. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you give somebody like an intense amount of pain, like during or after surgery, and then you go, okay, it's done, and they had like a big spike of pain right before you said it was done, they'll remember it as having been way more painful than if you give them that big spike of pain and then you say, it's not done. And then they're kind of like coming down off of it. And then you say it's done after they're well off of that big spike. They remembered as having been way less painful, even if the total quantifiable amount of pain was more.
So if you're doing 5 weeks of open wads, and I know that for myself and for some of the athletes we've had, it's psychologically demanding every week to push all the way to the edge. You know, if you don't end on that, maybe then, you know, you'll be able to approach the next week with a little bit fresher mind. You know, say you do the open workout on Monday or on a Saturday, you know, and then you do something nice and easy, work on some goats, practice some things, flush everything out that afternoon. And then on Monday, the training again, I like to lift something heavy and kind of get, I don't want to go like anything. That's when you want to do stuff that's as far from what you're going to see at the open as possible, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, what you might anticipate that week. Maybe do something long and easy. And then as the week progresses again, get the intensity high. So it's going to be like mini tapers within the open. So you might do like a 5x5 back squat. Mm-hmm. That might be a little high for most people on Monday. And then you do maybe a 20-minute AMRAP, but you go at like 90%. And then on Tuesday, you might keep it short and intense. Wednesday, long. And Thursday, short and intense again, mm-hmm. and then you crush the wad again on Saturday for the next week.
Yeah, it's actually a very similar situation to what starters in baseball have. The starting pitchers in baseball, Major League Baseball, they have a 5-day cycle. They pitch every 5 days. They open the game. In college, it's every 7 days. So they're on a cycle and a routine where they know that they're going to throw again every 5 days. There's five pitchers, and they just go on a rotation. One pitcher, and then the next, and the next, and the next. And then when they're back up 5 days later, they go again. And so if you're watching a Major League Baseball game, the starter goes out there, he throws, and then oftentimes right when he gets done, he goes inside and trains.
Because he goes in and squats.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly what he does. He goes in and does his heavy lower body day right after he throws. His arm's tired, so he doesn't train his arm that much. He might do a little bit of cuff exercise, nothing too crazy, but he'll go in and he'll tax his legs. That way he has maximum time to recover the joints and the muscles that weren't already taxed from throwing. Grant, I don't want to get into a big debate about use your legs when you're throwing and all that. That's not the point. But the point is that he wants to tax his legs. That way, when he goes to throw the next time, he's as recovered as possible.
Because the point is that squatting taxes the arm. Like, you can't just, like, expect the training, that heavy training system, to have no effect on that arm, too. So if you went ahead and fucking did that the next day, you're it prolonging the fatigue.
Yeah, they've looked at hormone studies, too. You know, if you do heavy squats on one day, for days after that, you know, your testosterone is going to be a little bit higher.
Yeah, and practically, it's not like you don't
weigh pretty ideal.
And you're holding that weight with that fucking arm, and it's tired. It's going to be even more fatigued, just practically.
So that's another practical
pitching's
question.
Pitching's easy. What are you talking about, man?
That's a weird position. That's a fascinating position.
It is.
Those guys, it's a very huge skill, huge, like, isolated. The forces at that shoulder and what your body does and the way it's kind of imbalanced. Like, it's just so different, a case study in training an athlete.
That's a fun exercise to do. When, as you guys know, I was a strength coach for the Colorado Rockies in 2006, and being able to, like, just play catch with some of those guys is a freaky experience.
Different world.
You can hear the ball sizzling as it comes to you. It's like
fuck, fuck, fuck. You stick your hand up with a glove. Oh, God, just don't hit me in the face.
Yeah.
Well, I had that experience when I played college football and everything. I would play catch with the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, we had a couple of really good quarterbacks that, not that we don't do now, I'm saying this is my experience. But, like, to get like 20 yards away from that guy and have him, you just see him look right at you and throw the ball right there, like, release his finger pointing right between your eyes, and then you just see a ball go, sue, like on a razor, right towards your face, and you just go, and just go sticks to your hands. Oh, fuck, thank God I caught that.
All right, so from a practical point of view, how do you know when to take a day off? You got 5 weeks where you have to be at your best. How do you know when you need to take a day off?
Ooh.
It's a big, it depends question, too.
That's tough.
You know what I do? Having no experience in this, just talking out my ass, I test my vertical jump this whole time. And when it goes down, I know I'm not quite ready to do it.
It's actually, a lot of coaches do use that. That's not a bad way of going about it.
Yeah.
It depends on, you know, how experienced the athlete is. You know, if an athlete's been doing this thing for 5, 6, 7 years, they probably know. If they go, hey, I'm feeling beat up, like, you know, this is actually some, I coach one really advanced athlete. She's like, I feel really bad. I think I need to take tomorrow off. I'm like, do it. Mm-hmm. And then I also have some other athletes that aren't as advanced. They're like, I'm feeling really beat up. I'm like, okay.
Shut up.
I'm looking at the numbers. And it's a little bit like that. So I think using a vertical jump test for somebody who may not be as experienced could be really good. What he's talking about is, did you explain it?
No, well, I'll say
let you explain it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, knowing a lot of research and stuff that we were even participating in, that one of the first things that go, one of the early canaries in your coal mine will be your ability to produce force, I guess, fast sprinting. And if your sprints and runs and jumps and bounds and maybe Olympic lifts feel a little sticky, it's not nothing you don't freak out about, but you know it's probably an early sign that fatigue's accumulating, things are getting a little down. And if you can take a little break and you feel zippy again, then that's because the strength thing, the ability to crush a wide is probably going to be the last thing to go. You can still pump out good strength work, but this whole time you're getting slower and slower and slower. You just can't quite tell. I always use that like my power thing. When I wanted to squat really maximum weights, I know the faster I was going to be, the better shot I had at doing that. Strength alone wasn't the mark I needed to measure fatigue by.
Right.
So what happens if HQ just decides none of these barbell movements, none of these bodyweight movements, it's all kettlebells and running and no AMRAPs?
Fuck.
Where are we going to be at then?
Well, you'll be in better shape.
You'll be a better person.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I will be completely honest that most of my predictions are based off historical data, and if they change, they change the competition drastically, it's going to be tough.
It's an unlikely scenario. I think the likely scenario is most of it is just what we've seen, and that might be a curveball or two. And in which case, you're prepared probably for the curveball.
I definitely spend some time picking out those movements that you might see in regionals, and I like to throw those in to people. And for people who are prepping for the open, for two reasons. One is, the potential curveball. More than likely, they're going to throw in, if they do throw a curveball in the open, it'll probably be something that was done at regionals, I think. Yeah. And then the other thing is, hey, you make it to regionals. At least you're practicing those movements that were historically at regionals as well. So
because you're doing the things that are, you're going back and working on foundation anyway, which is going to help you do the things in the future. It's not like it's a bad thing. I fucked up the strategy. No, it's still a great strategy no matter what. You worked on fundamentals and you got stronger. You're better.
Right.
Universally better.
If you're pretty strong at all the basic barbell movements and you can do all of the gymnastics movements, you know, muscle ups, chest bar pull ups, handstand push ups, pistols, if you can do all those movements unbroken, then you're probably okay for the open.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happens.
I've seen weightlifters, a lot of weightlifters, one of the things that they do really well is they move really well. And you see the same thing with gymnasts, is yep. they are masters of like movement, right? So you throw them into CrossFit a lot of times, they pick up on the skills unusually fast. You're like, man, I can't believe that weightlifter was able to like learn how to do kipping pull-ups so well. And you take that gymnast, it's like, man, they move really well with the bar on that snatch. It's like, well,
they understand
they have
motion.
The fundamentals down. Yeah, they understand how things work. And so, yeah.
And then it's easy to add on the metabolic adaptation to that with just a couple years of committing to it and developing it to get competitive. They wanted to do it. Yeah, I mean, if you take Kendrick now and try to make him do a wad, somebody's out there, I saw Kendrick do that wad. He didn't do so good. He wasn't trying. That's an important thing to note. He wasn't trying, didn't give a shit about it. He's just showing his motion. If he trained and worked on it, he would certainly get a lot better. Because
what you mean by trying is, you mean prepping.
Prepping.
Because he was trying.
Like, make it important enough to change your training to get right. better at that thing, which he wasn't
doing.
Which
he's not going
to do. He doesn't care about that. No, he just was having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. A year of conditioning, he would be completely different.
Yeah, he's a
for the CrossFit stuff.
He'd be a monster.
He would crush.
He's a same goes for a lot of good weightlifters, man. They're moving really well. I mean, I've learned that so much in my own life this year. Like, really, the first thing that needs to happen is you move really excellent as possible, and you always work on that. Then you add load back to that. That's been my greatest lesson coming out of powerlifting, was to drop that shit.
I think one thing the Open will point out, especially if you have people judging you or you're
gotta
videoing.
Move well, man.
Yeah, you all of a sudden those half-ass thrusters and the chest bar pull-ups you counted in your workout, but the judge isn't counting now.
You're gonna feel really naked
yeah.
out there.
Yeah. So yeah, as Chris said, master the movement. Don't worry about the load or the volume. And just do that, and then start adding in slowly.
The return on your investment. The return on your investment from that is so fucking huge.
If you do shitty reps, you're gonna have.
It's like a steroid effect. I'd say it's like a steroid effect. If you move better, get used to it, then add load back in. You're really shocked at how well you can lift and move and do these motions.
Sure.
It's so crazy.
All right, guys. Speaking of ending on high notes,
yay!
We're taking off, and we will see you next week. Make sure to go to barbellstroke.com, sign up for the newsletter. If you enjoyed this podcast, over to iTunes, leave a positive comment, 5 stars. If you leave me less than 5 stars, don't do anything.
Everyone tell us how good we look.
Go buy
and
Chris's
go
book.
Buy Chris's book.
Keep your eyes peeled
Way
for that
past
one.
Strong.
It's good.